The 2004 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents Session 376, Embracing Our Homosexual Children, a discussion featuring Ron Scow, Mike Green, and Bill Bradshaw.
My name is Mike Green. I'm a co-producer for the film that we'll be screening and discussing today, entitled Embracing Our Homosexual Children. We'd like to welcome all of you to this session and appreciate your attendance here. I am especially grateful to Ron Scow, the other co-producer on this film, and Bill Bradshaw, who narrated the film, in being here. Also, we have members of the family who are a part of the video who are here today. And we want to welcome John and Ilsa Horsmansoff. And if you guys could go ahead and stand so they can see you, then we can have you recognized. So you'll see them in the film as well. We'd also like to thank Andy and Ernie, who we'll be able to hear from later, and they have both traveled from Ernie from California and Andy from Nevada. So this family's made some sacrifices in traveling great distances, and we appreciate their efforts in attending here. I'd like to start out by introducing the film by saying that Embracing Our Homosexual Children has a universal message for all people, that the feelings of homosexuality don't go away. This film portrays an LDS family that nurtured and loved all of their children, including three gay sons and a lesbian daughter. This film is the third documentary in an educational series to help those people that have the misunderstanding that homosexuality is chosen and one can change to heterosexual. We want to rephrase the myth of change in choice with the idea that the feelings of homosexuality don't go away. We show this film here to make people aware of the resources that are now available to help those families who are misinformed on this issue. And so we'll go ahead and proceed with the film, and afterwards we'll have the family come up and address any questions or answers.
Church service in the Far East was a great blessing to me and my wife Marge and our children. We have great respect for Asian people, as our association with them has done so much to enrich our lives. As you can see, this corner of our home contains a few artistic reminders of that culture. It's also a place where we hang one of the pictures of our family. Because family is the center of what we hold most dear, we wanted you to become acquainted with an Asian American family who has gained our special admiration. How to embrace and support our homosexual children is the focus of this film. This is a family portrait of the Horsmanshaw family, in which there are three homosexual sons and one daughter who is lesbian. The remarkable parents in this home have been able to put their arms around all of their children and the others in their extended family in a way that makes each feel loved and valued. Their daughters Lorraine and Bianca and their son Ernie will begin the introductions.
My name's Lorraine. Oh, growing up in this family was interesting, I guess, with 11 kids. We got to be ourselves, that's for sure. You know, we didn't really have a whole lot of restrictions. So, yeah, growing up was, it was fun and it was crazy at times. And I guess I'm the musician of the family. Actually, we've all played music. I'm the one that kind of stuck it out, being the musician artist in the family. And, you know, I'm a singer-songwriter, and I wrote a song for my mom, and it's basically a song about, you know, her being a mother, really, and some of the things, you know, she had to go through, and that my mom's just, she's always come from love. That's the biggest message, you know, that she's always given us. And, you know, that her being a Mormon and everything and has never really stopped her showing her love for our children, you know, and us being gay has, it's not really an issue. It never was an issue in our family. So anyways, I call this song my mother's song.
Child in this world, she says that we are all God's children. God is not prejudiced, she loves everyone. She says, love, 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 for all my children, love. Gonna heal this world. La 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 la.
You're on the musical, yeah. I'm on wedding anniversary. 50 wedding anniversary. The dinner is all here. They're all here. Listen, I can see who's who. I can see. The oldest, honey, can you say what Roy is?
Yeah. Roy is here.
I can see Roy, this one, and his daughter.
And then you get
Margot.
Margot. After Margot comes.
Stephen. Yeah. Andy, and Gethin, and then come Ernest, and Mark, you mentioned too. En nou, is Markum Lenny. En Sharon is Sharon. En Sharon, dit is Sharon. En achter Sharon komt Lenny. Lenny, want achter Lenny komt Lorraine. Dat is voor iemand hier. Hier, en haar. Haar companion.
Achter Lorraine, dan je got. Stan?
Stanley. At the stand is Bianca. Come, even where's Bianca now? I can find it.
Yes, Bianca.
Yeah, this Bianca.
After Bianca, you can Marcel.
And Marcel.
My parents currently are residents of Salt Lake. They're my dad is in his late 70s. And they're at that time in life when they're retired, and we're hoping that they enjoy it. And I think they've built quite a legacy. And I mean by that is we had their 50th anniversary, 50th wedding anniversary, which in itself is an accomplishment. That took place about 2.5 years ago. And I was asked to make some remarks there reflecting on my parents. And I said probably the legacy that they have left us is that all of us, their children and their children's children, first of all, that we're there, that they're in the United States, and that we're all successful at what we do. And we all have a good ethical work value and things of that nature. But anyway, we're talking 11 kids, 5 brothers, 5 sisters. And I spoke to my mom about 2 months ago, and I think she said 21 great-grandchildren, 19 grandchildren. And the way they came to the United States has to do with the Mormon Church. My parents, by way of quick background, were originally from Indonesia, and World War II came, and as many of you know, that very bad time, and their country was invaded by Japan. My parents were affiliated with the Dutch. Indonesia was a Dutch colony for 300 years. And so when they gained their independence, they, of course, overthrew their colonial rulers. And the Netherlands, fearing a bloodbath, offered political asylum to about 400,000 people. And my parents took that opportunity to get out of the country. They were also Christian. And as you may not know, Indonesia is predominantly an Islamic nation. So they went to Holland. We're talking about a total change. And that's why I think my parents are really great people. They may be humble in that they never had any education or educational opportunities. But when I think of what they did, I don't know if I would have the courage to do what they did. They went to Holland, started a family, and now went from an equatorial country and a different culture to a European nation. My parents not only joined the church that then sought, as many people have and as many people continue to do so, and I do want to make note of this because it's just very part of my soul, and that is to come to this country, the greatest on earth. And so they sought sponsorship to come to the United States. And when they went into the authorities, they said, well, we'd like to go to California. That's a popular name. But they said, well, you know. And then they recognized that my dad had put down Mormon. And said, well, you know, maybe I ought to try to go to Salt Lake City. My dad said, well, let's try Salt Lake City. A man by the name of Tiernink, some of you may recognize that name, received notification as a Dutch consul and said to his son, who had served a mission in Holland, you know what? Maybe we ought to, do you know this family? He said, I know that family, Dad. It's this Indonesian family, and they have the missionaries over. They're very poor, but they're always feeding. He said, why don't we sponsor them? That's how we got to the United States, and more children born in the U.S., 11 kids.
One that told me, Mom, I got something to say to you. I went on a mission because I want you to be proud of me, feeling proud of me. But my feeling is just the opposite. I am attracted to boys, and I know that when I was 7 years old, I knew already that I went on a mission to make you, Dad and Mom, proud, she said to me. So I accepted that right away, because what I felt is, you know, I hear from people of, and on the news about the gays and about the lesbian, you know, but I told John, look, they are lesbian gays, but we are all his children, and you got to treat them equally, love them. That's the only thing what you can do. But which way we go, that is their responsibility, not mine. But my feeling is, as the Lord loved his children, I love my children. And as I accept them how they are, that's it. But then, now after a week or two, he said, Mom, and he said to me, can you talk to Dad? Can you talk to Dad? Yeah, I will. So I talked to him, and he said, why you went on a mission? And you know, he was a little bit mad. And he did it for us. That we are proud of him, that he went on a mission. But I told him also, right away, said, look, we are all children. God love us, and I love all children. He gave me those children in my hand to raise them, and when they are grown up, that's their decision where they go, what way they go. I raise them to a certain time. I can tell them to get that with them, After all, the Lord gave us all freedom to choose and select how we want, how we will do it. and that's a strong feeling of me.
Now when we come back on mission, and then I heard, yeah, he's a gay. He said, what, a gay? What is gay? I don't know what gay is. Well, this and this and that. Oh. He said, how is it possible? Go on mission and then come back, he's a gay? They are born like that. Oh. Well, I'm not agree with that. And one of the kids was a birthday. I saw that on the table. Peculiar people. I said, hey, that book. I started reading that book. They are all Mormons. And then I said, oh, they are born like that. Then I said, oh, that's okay then. Yeah.
You know, when Lorraine, my daughter, would make music, she was a lesbian. And she's done many friends that I told her, and so Andy, all your friends, and Ernest, all your friends are my son and daughter. And some of those friends of Lorraine call me mom. They accept me as mom because their mom doesn't accept them. And he called me always mom. Something mom? Say he did, mom. Yeah, I accept him. I'm your mom, and
I was baptized into church and grew up in Salt Lake. And from about approximately age 12 to 17 was not active, but very much aware of the church, of course. And then got to that age of wanting to know what I wanted to do with my life and made it actually a serious pursuit in terms of my own life. Was the church about? Was it true? Who is God and the nature of God? At least, looking back, I recognize that that's what I was doing. And gained a testimony as to his existence and to the divinity of his son, which I still have very much more so than I did at that point in my life. And so I cleaned up my life and went on a mission. I think when you talk to missionaries, if they're really honest, they'll say that missions are hard, and a lot of times are, it wasn't the greatest thing on earth, but very hard work. At the same time, they'll reflect on times that they say as some of the happiest times as they've had experiences in sharing the gospel with other people. And not only that, getting outside of their self, the whole idea of sharing and realizing that there is pleasure and joy to be found in life in giving to others. But for me, I'd like to say most of my mission was almost a riot in that I went to upstate New York, which is where all the church sites are. So it's not only that we had the church sites, but I do think I had a unique mission in that I spent so much time in the mission office, about 18 months, and about 16 of that I was working with the mission president. And we would, a lot of our work was also preparing the Hill Cumorah pageant, that is to coordinate the housing of all the participants. But again, what I'm saying is I loved my mission, and it was a great privilege to be and visit and to study the sites of where it all happened, and to become very aware that when the church started, it was very fragile in its number, and it was not in a friendly environment. And yet, enough had evolved in our country by way of principles under the Constitution, but the environment was right, because I'm convinced that had the restoration taken place anywhere else, it might have been snuffed out. But to then see the church sites and the sacred grove and, of course, the Hill Cumorah pageant, I came home very much with in mind where I wanted my life to go, and that is to get an education and to be married in the temple and raise a family. And so I pursued that. I went to Ricks College. I loved Ricks College. I was a student body officer at Ricks College. And remember that one of the funnest things I did is we got Alex Haley to talk at the time, because Ricks was a big thing then. And he had appeared on Johnny Carson, and I felt he had done more in advertising the genealogy program of the church than we had done in 100 years, because he was telling Johnny Carson, look at all these people you're related to. And he said, where did you get this? And then he explained about the Mormon church and its interest in genealogy. So I went to Rick's college after my mission. That also was the first time when I spoke to another individual and disclosed that I had same-sex attractions. I'd never spoken to anybody about this, and certainly I was very quiet about it. My earliest recollection in my life that I had same-sex attraction, I was in junior high, and I remember even the boy's name. I just knew that I not only liked him, I ended up dreaming about him. And when we were in gym, if he was in the locker room, I just, you know, realized that I was I didn't know what it was. All I knew is I really liked seeing him, and I just never reflected on it as I would now to say, trying to figure out what is this. I just, you know, didn't know. I just recall that I could not get my eyes off of this boy. His name was Tom, and I just thought I wanted to be around him. I never made that equation at that time. But when I was in high school, I had friends, and they would talk about girls, and then it started to dawn on me that I thought maybe, you know, I'm missing something, and it'll happen at some point. There's something in it without having thought this out, something inside me said, you know, be careful, and that I realized I started compensating, actually a lot. On my mission, one mission companion loved to wrestle, but then would tell people, don't wrestle with Elder Horsensoft because, boy, you'll really get hurt. And I realized I would really wrestle hard because I had this fear that if I didn't show this manliness, they just, I don't know why, I just thought, you know, I just wanted to make sure that I now realize that I was actually trying to be this role because I had an innate sense in me that, you know, you can't ever tell anybody that you have these feelings because, you know, it will not be accepted. And you, so I hid it and did what I was supposed to do. That is, I was doing what others were doing. I was going to school, active in the church, Sunday school, state president, I think. It's a lot of fun. But what happened is, in my second year, I met a girl who fell in love with me, and I felt very close to, and so I went to my branch president and basically said, here's my situation. And he asked me some questions, I think to verify. I think he wanted to make sure. I'm sure that, you know, maybe he didn't run into this much. I think he wanted to make sure that me and my feelings. I mean, are you sure? And basically after we talked, I think he was reassured that this was really the way I felt, and I didn't have any idea as to why this was. So he decided that, and he asked me, could I give you a blessing? And I said, well, of course. So he gave me a blessing, and in that blessing, he encouraged me to pursue this relationship, and that, you know, if it should lead to marriage, not to disclose to my wife the situation, that in due time the opportunity would present itself, and I would know, and then we could address it, and then she could help me. And so I did exactly that. I married that girl, and we had three children, Jessica, Justin, and Jason. I don't know how to thing with J's, you know. But anyway, beautiful children, and pursued my education. From Rick's College, I went to BYU, and I really thought, what do I want to do with my life? Well, my brother, who is an attorney at that time, was going to law school, and he encouraged me to go back to school, and that's what I did. I went to BYU, finished my undergraduate, and then got a scholarship at D.J. Reuben Clark Law School. So here I was with three children now in school, and when I look back, I'd say, you know, I don't know how I did that. So Cindy stayed home with the kids, and I was in law school. And 6 years into the marriage, living with the predicament that my feelings and my same-sex attraction had not diminished one iota. It was as part of me as the color of my eyes or the color of my hair. And that created its deep conflicts within me. At the time, my wife, Cindy, was working at the Provo Temple. I was teaching at the MTC. And she felt that something was hugely amiss in my life. So she made it a pursuit of fasting and prayer without divulging that to me. And one Saturday morning, woke up, and she turned to me and said, Ernie, I've had a dream. And I said, yeah. She said, in that dream, I saw you, and the next thing I felt that I was inside you looking out and seeing the world as you see it. And she said that I felt this feeling, and it really frightened me. And I said, what did you feel? At the same time, kind of feeling like I think she's heading in this direction. And she said, the desire to be with men, is it true? And I'd never lied to her. And though I had never, ever acted on my sexual orientation, I told her, yeah, yes, it's true. But I've never done anything. And I think that was the beginning at the end of our marriage. And I feel very sorry for Cindy in that, in a way, I felt I had betrayed her because she said, why didn't you tell me? And I really felt that had been a great injustice to her to enter the marriage and not disclose something so fundamental. And I think that it made her doubt herself and her sexuality. And too often, as happens, she looked to herself, what have I done? Is there something that I've done to create this? So I really felt for her. And stepping outside that picture for a moment, I feel for all spouses who deal with this. And at that time, and I think still now, there needs to be more progress made within the church to help people who are in this situation, because the situation is not unique. So, though we tried to keep the marriage intact, it did not work. And we eventually separated and were divorced. Now, I say that in such few words, but let me tell you, I'm talking about a time of great sadness, of pain, of hurt, of anxiety, of worry. I love my children as any other man can love them. I've always been close to them. It raised fundamental questions as to what was to happen to me. Questions as to how could this fit in God's plan? But I still remember sitting alone in an apartment that was completely empty. And really, for me, I now realize in true despair. And I'm not one given to showing or expressing my emotions when it comes to tears. I think it was the first time in my life that I cried as an adult. And so I didn't know what to do or how to move on. But I did make it a pursuit of prayer. My testimony of prayer has never changed. And that is just to have a testimony that if you truly, truly, as the scriptures have taught us, that if you truly have a desire in your heart and ask with all your heart, the Lord is going to respond. And my question wasn't your fundamental question of am I going to go to hell or not or what's going to happen. I just needed to know some peace. How could I have any peace and maybe the road that I was going to set foot on would lead to my loss of membership in the church? And so it dawned on me that while I don't have all the answers, I'm going to trust the Lord. And at the same time, I had a continuing obligation, as we all do, to live to the best of our abilities. And that is to serve one another. Here I was, now facing the dilemma, and all of these issues coming to me as to what was going to happen with me in my life. And knowing well the gospel of Jesus Christ, and knowing well the doctrines of the church. And it was a very, very difficult time. But it dawned on me in reading this scripture that I needed to continue to live the gospel and to have faith in things that I could not understand, while having to go on this journey of sacrificing something that's been of great significance in my life, the church and its affiliation and the members of the church. I was facing a divorce and facing the fact at the age of approximately 36 or so, 37, that I was gay. And I needed to learn to come at peace with myself. It wasn't until I was separated from Cindy and the children. It wasn't until then, and for the first time, for something that I had been dealing with as long as I can remember, at least in junior high, when I was in eighth grade, to that point, I had never actually done anything or explored what homosexuality was about. I had no sexual experience with another man. Probably because of my educational background. I actually, for a long time, approached the issue of homosexuality from an academic viewpoint, study, and try to determine, you know, well, what do we know, what can we do, what are its origins? The thing I found disturbing for me personally is, well, there are a lot of theories about perhaps something happened to you when you were younger, somebody acted inappropriately with you, or some other type of environmental situations. And what frustrated me about that is I wish I could hang my hat on something like that, but there was nothing to hang my hat on. Nothing ever happened to me. Nobody did anything ever to me. Simply, I didn't find my answers. The more I read, the more confused I was, because it says that doesn't tell my story. It's just the way I am. What was rather shocking to me in some ways, and stunning, was to learn that I was not alone in my family. When I had proposed to Cindy, and we had set a date to be married in the Salt Lake Temple, my older brother of a year and a half wanted to meet with me. So we met at the University of Utah at Milan, and I remember talking, and at that time, he disclosed to me that he would not be able to participate in the temple marriage, and then proceeded to disclose to me that, and I don't know what word we used, we didn't have the word gay back then, but he came out to me, and I in turn came out to him. Now that wasn't meant we had, you know, a lot of communication about this, but, you know, and he told me years later that he was not, he felt that he was in no position to advise me because he knew of my activity and strong affiliation with the church as he had been himself. He wanted me to find my own path. He wanted to support me, and he still has mixed feelings if maybe if he could go back in time and say, well, Ernie, you know, you may love Cindy or she may love you, but, you know, this may not be a good thing to do because this won't go away. But no, he was very supportive. He said he would support me and that he wouldn't disclose this to anybody. Only to learn later on in my life, and this is what's so interesting maybe in a family where there are gay children, you would tend to think that they would be communicating with each other, but no. It was when I was an adult when I found out about my brother, And later on, my sister, Lorraine, who's a musician, has been worldwide and going around and playing her music, and she is a lesbian. And then a few years later to find out that my youngest brother is also gay. And all of this information came to me chronologically. That is, it wasn't just everybody just said, oh, hey, this is great. No, it was, I was surprised to learn this as I went along, that each of my gay siblings didn't talk to anybody either. Thought they were alone and didn't know what to do and didn't know how to handle it, so they just kept it to themselves.
I remember telling my girlfriend, and I hadn't even come out of the closet. I didn't even know what coming out of the closet was. It was just like, oh, you bring your girlfriend home, and mom's like, oh, we love you, yeah, you're part of our family, and everybody accepted my girlfriend. So it was like, it was not really a big deal coming out. I mean, I didn't really know what coming out was until, you know, I'd already been a lesbian for quite some time. So, you know, yeah, coming out wasn't really a big issue in our family because it was always based on love and acceptance, and there was, you know, no question really about why are you doing this or anything. It was like, well, this is, you know, what makes them happy, and it's pretty natural. Well, yeah, I've definitely seen more strife in other families with the whole gay Mormon issue, you know. And, you know, you feel sorry for them, you know, because it's that thing of, you know, I guess it's ignorance and not understanding, or that whole thing of rules of, you know, well, this is the rule, so basically, you know, that's what we follow. Instead of, you know, but my mom's really an open Mormon, you know. I think there's a lot of cool Mormons out there. I mean, she's ruled really by love and by her gut instincts of, you know, this is a good person, you know, and not judging them about how they live. So we've had some pretty, you know, I think my parents have been pretty good about the whole thing of just really coming from love. My mother seen the pain of war. She's had the hungry children crying out of fear. She reaches out with the grace of God and feeds them up to keep them warm and safe. She says,
unusual situation that in my family there are other gay members of my family, and a brother who served a mission, and another brother, younger brother of mine, and they had partners. And so when I met them, I could see that, you know, for whatever I thought homosexuality was and what homosexuals do, that here they were, not only stable and very normal people in appearance and behavior, but having values like anybody else, you know, wanting to be successful in life and working hard. My brothers had partners, and I could see that there was real joy in those relationships.
How do you feel about Mark and Kevin?
For me, Mark, Kevin, yeah. What a good guy. I love them. They're nice guys. You know, I know them.
It was good growing up here. It was very loving, very close to my brothers and sisters. They were, since I am the younger, second to youngest, so I'm number 10 out of 11. My brothers and sisters were always there for me. Now, our parents are not the normal parents, at least the parents that I saw that my friends had, or that you see on TV. Definitely my parents are not like that. They're very accepting and loving of everybody. I could bring anybody home and my parents would accept them and love them and welcome them into our home. I know a lot, and the only reason I know a lot of gay people is because of my brothers and sisters, so I'm very accepting of the gay, you know, people. I have lots of friends. For example, I have a girlfriend who has a partner. They are been together for quite a while. They have a home, beautiful home, great job. They're having their first baby, and they still, their parents just cannot accept it. She can't go over to the house with her girlfriend. She lives in the closet. It's sad. And for the longest time, when they first started living together, they did the whole two-bedroom thing. I mean, parents just thought they were roommates, and then finally when they came clean about the whole thing, you know, they were totally just not accepting of it. It's pretty sad. I mean, they're missing out on their child's life. I just can't imagine missing out on my child's life. So, I mean, there's nothing accomplished, nothing good out of it, that's for sure. I love all of my brother-in-laws and sister-in-laws. They're great people. I love anybody that my brother or sister would love and bring into their family. I mean, if they love them, obviously there's something good about them. So, you know, I love them and accept them.
Yeah, but comparing at the differences between where a family's accepting or a family isn't, I just have to second what Bianca says. I think it's sad for everyone involved, because certainly children, you know, suffer when their parents reject them or aren't involved in their lives. It's a tragedy. But to go to the extent of cutting them off and denying them, and I have a lot of friends in that situation, Mormon friends especially, because I think, unfortunately, with the ideals that are set forth in the Mormon faith, and when those aren't met, I think people mean well but don't do well when they say, well, if you're going to be that way, I'm not going to have anything to do with you. I have to grieve my mother, though. I don't think that's what the Lord would have us do. But people may wonder, how does a family that, you know, that is a Mormon family in Salt Lake City, Utah, deal with the situation when there are children in the family who reveal that they're gay? And first of all, it has to be, for most traditional Mormon families, extremely difficult thing to go through, because for many they would say, no, it's not a thing that begins and ends, it just continues, it does not go away. And it's got to create a lot of conflict, because certainly in the Mormon tradition, what we desire of our children, and I have three children of my own, but what you desire of them is happiness. And part of the happiness, construed through our Mormonism, is marriage, is children. And all of that seems to be suddenly put on the altar as being sacrificed or being forfeit because the individual's gay. On top of that, stepping one step back into the picture, what about the individual? I'm fortunate in that I grew up in a very supporting family. My mom is the epitome, I think, of what it means to just have unconditional love. And perhaps it's unique, and people say, well, that's a rare situation, I don't know what that means in this case, but what I'm trying to say is, for my parents, the issue that they had gay children was not a major difficult issue. Providing for the family and seeing that we were good people and that we were happy was of greater importance. And so my mom has been very accepting and very supportive. But I think that's the exception for Mormon families, because of the expectations and the hopes that we had, you know, we're being faithful. I think a lot of us as kids, we don't appreciate our parents till we look back and realize how much they sacrificed for us. And certainly, that's where I owe a lot to my dad, too. He never complained about all the work he had to do, and he worked a lot to keep that family fed, to keep us going. And all of us, I think, have picked up his tremendous work ethic based upon all the feedback I get and the feedback from my siblings. We owe a lot to our parents, and here later in their lives am I realizing what noble people they are. They don't have college degrees. They don't have mansions. They don't have professional accomplishments, but they have character. And very devoted to their family, sacrificed for their family. And the United States is their third country. And it was their courage and just their simple faith that got us here. When I think back, it takes a family to come to the United States, and the American dream now. And I owe it to my parents that I live now in this country, and I hold my citizenship sacred.
Same-sex attraction is a human condition that is constant across ethnic groups, geography, and culture. In my professional work as a university professor of molecular biology, I have examined and accept the scientific evidence that strongly suggests that homosexuality is rooted in biological factors. More simply, Ilsa and John Horstmanshaw have accepted the life experience of their children. They believe the testimonies of those children that being homosexual is an innate, unchosen part of their personalities. When four of their children came out to them, these wonderful parents did not go into their own closet. Ernie, Andy, Stan, and Lorraine continue to receive the same unconditional love they have always known. Homosexuality in a loved one brings changed expectations into Latter-day Saint homes. Most often there is also considerable pain and anxiety due to the unfortunate unkindness and insensitivity that is often manifested. The Horstmanshaws have responded to these challenges with unwavering support for their children. Acknowledging that we don't know all the answers to this complex aspect of humanity, we recommend the example of this loving family as we all try to care for one another and seek for greater understanding.
You can push them away because that is against the law of the Lord. I told them we can do that. You could accept them, love them. But I found out all those children are the loveliest people, the loveliest people to me, because they have so much. Not only patient, but they are very kind, very, very kind, tenderly, and they respect you. Their respect for other people is so hard, you know, I notice that, all those things.
Thank you very much. I'd like to invite Andy and Ernie to come up and sit at the table. For those who might have questions, we've got a few chairs right up here, and you're welcome to come up. And if you have any questions, and before we have some questions, I'm going to ask Ernie and Andy both to say have a couple of remarks. But first, I want to share with it was a year and a half ago that I met Ernie and Mark at a Gamma Fight Gay Mormon Fathers retreat, and my life has been blessed and enriched since that point to be able to see these two people because I had a life-changing moment for me when I witnessed, after meeting them 6 months later, last summer, they had a commitment ceremony. And it was one of the most profound experiences that I've had to be able to see two men come together in a ceremony and make those vows. And it was really powerful. And it was at that time that I met the rest of the Horseman Saw family. And Ron and I had been working on two other documentaries, and on our trip home I said, this is a story that needs to take place because I have siblings who don't want to have anything to do with me. And they need this kind of a message to further understand what's happening. We have copies of this film that are available for $5 that we'll be able to sell afterwards. And we hope that you will take copies of these videos with you and show them to local church leaders, your young men's and young women's presidents, your bishops and stake presidents, and families who are dealing with this and struggling with this. As Ron and I have been working in this area, our premise is that if you will take our materials, the pamphlets, the persistence pamphlet that was on the program earlier, as well as the LDS guide, and families begin to read these pamphlets and look at these videos, it will give them the opportunity to have a better understanding that the homosexual feelings don't go away. And so with that, I'd like to have Andy start and maybe take a minute or two and talk about the film, talk about your experience in coming out to your parents, a few things that might be on your mind, as well as Ernie. So we'll turn the time over to them, and then if anybody has any questions, they're welcome to ask them. And then, Ron, wherever you want to step in, or Bill, go ahead.
Thank you, Mike. Well, first of all, I want to thank Mike and Ron for putting this together. Of course, I will always have with me the great memories of being raised by my parents and those experiences. But this is something I will also treasure in years to come. I'll be able to watch this. I think it's really captured very accurately how it was living in our home. Also, my partner Kevin wanted to be here. Actually, he was my spouse until 2 days ago when the California Supreme Court invalidated our marriage. We were married February 15th in San Francisco, the second day that they were performing marriages. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court, as most of you know, Supreme Court of California invalidated those marriages. I personally think that is a proper decision because if a city official, any governmental official, disagrees with a law, I don't think the thing to do is to simply disobey it. I think there's other ways about it, but I think it's only a matter of time. Being a lawyer myself, I have great respect for the law, and this country is based on law and the rule of law, not the rule of people, so I think it was a right decision, but I think change will come. So he wishes he could be here. He had some business to take care of. I don't have much to say except that I have just the greatest love for my parents. I'm really glad this film was produced. Coming out for me was, I didn't know that they were going to be interviewing the family till 2 days before that took place, and so I couldn't change my plans. I was out of town, so I was not present, as you could see, for the interviews and didn't get to tell my story. When I went on my mission, it was not only to make my parents proud. That was indeed a reason, but it was also because I did at that time have a very strong testimony of the church. But I had known even long before, back to age, I don't know, 8, 9, I had these feelings. I had a chance to get engaged. I dated a lot after my mission. I was very, very close to a girl. We had a real spiritual connection, but I just knew that for me, it wasn't the proper thing to do. I had these feelings, and I just knew they weren't going to go away. So I didn't get married. Instead, I pursued a career and met Kevin 14 years ago. We've been together ever since. We have a home in Reno. And Kevin thinks of my parents as his mom and dad more than he does of his own. He's always felt very welcome there. It was shocking to him that when we visited, I think on our second visit, that mom and dad made one bed for us, a queen-size bed, next to their room for us to stay in. I know that must have been difficult for them, but they always respected us for the decisions we made, and the love they feel for us was always paramount and more important to them than their loyalty to the church, I think, though I think they, of course, have their testimonies. That's all I have to say, unless there's any questions anyone wants to ask of me. Thanks.
Well, I think you've heard enough from me through the video. Just a couple of thoughts I would like to share, though. First of all, my deep thanks and my appreciation is growing for the work that people like Mike and Ron and Bill are doing to educate and enlighten people and do so in a tactful, non-offensive way. And also to publicly let you know how much I appreciate not only my family, my brothers and sisters, but especially my parents, the salt of the earth. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Well, I think we ought to try to stir up some questions here. Some of you know that Professor Bradshaw, and I get that out, made an interesting lecture at BYU last spring. Some of you may want to ask him about that. I think there are some. Let me just add a couple of things. In putting the film together, one of the things we wanted to show is that you can have this kind of a home, this kind of nurturing, loving support from parents, and there are so many explanations you've heard about why people are gay, and none of them seem to apply to this family. I think as you look at them carefully, that's the conclusion I drew, and that's one of the things we tried to convey in the film. The other thing I find admirable, particularly these two that I know the best, is that they live their lives in such an honorable and good way. Great missionaries, great students, accomplished, and they simply took what life sent them and made the very best of it. And so I think they're wonderful to highlight and to let us see. So we really think that we just need what I call homosexuality 101, Introduction for Mormons. And we hope that films like this and the two others that we have produced. We have another one on the way. Carolyn Pearson has agreed to tell her story on a fourth video that is coming. And we think if more people hear and understand what it's like to just have these experiences happen as they have in this family, and then to respond the way they have in such a loving way. We don't really want, in my mind, these films are not about carrying an agenda on gay marriage. This is about how the family responds when their children, through their own experiences, feel that they need to pursue their lives the way they need to. And I think we can see why they did what they did. But it's more about, well, what does the family do in that case? And so the Horsemanshofs have been so exemplary and so wonderful. And I just love it when Ilse says, you've got to love them. You can't push them away. It's against the law of the Lord. And it is. So anyway, questions for anyone here? And please come up and sit right here. Bob, you can be first. And whoever wants to be second, come up and sit by Mike. And then you can say your question right into the microphone.
I just wanted to ask Brother Bradshaw whether he has received any repercussions from his talk last spring or anything he's done since then, because it seems that your views are not exactly supportive of the LDS party line, if I may phrase it that way. And if so, what the repercussions were, if you care to go into them.
My talk at BYU addressed two issues. One was a review of the scientific publications that show the evidence for a biological connection to homosexuality. The second was to address the issue of whether or not there is empirical evidence that LDS persons who have been involved in reparative or change therapy are successful in making a change. That evidence is overwhelming that that's a very, very, very rare event. There are no repercussions for me. I've not received any kinds of official condemnation or criticism. I've received a great deal of communication with gay and straight Mormons and non-Mormons around the country, and the only repercussions are that I'm unable to fully express to you how much I love and appreciate my gay brothers and sisters, both in and out of the church. I haven't met Kevin or Mark. Will you express my love to them when you see them?
My question is about the film itself. I was wondering how it's selling, or how many people, how much interest you find in this.
I just want to tell you that Mike arranged a screening a couple of months ago in Houston for the PFLAG group down there. And this is a small sample. We're just beginning to really get our marketing going and let groups like this know about the film. And we hope it's given to a lot of church people so that they can see it, and that you yourselves will show it to some. But anyway, the PFLAG group, just a small group that particular night. It was not a regularly scheduled event. There were 9 people there, and we sold 9 videos that night. So we that was exciting. It's been accepted for showing at the national meeting of PFLAG that will be held here in Salt Lake City in October. So we expect a lot of parents and friends of lesbians and gays will pick up the film and learn about it. And so let's see, what else should I say, Mike? We have, didn't we do, I think we've made 250 copies so far, and we have maybe 25 or, we have 50 left. So they're going, and we're going to keep putting them out as fast as you can use them. And that's one reason we're selling them for $5, is the object is to get them out there.
Do you know if this has been shown to any relief societies or anything?
I think it would be accurate to say it hasn't been shown yet at a relief society. However, I have shown it to 2 or 3 bishops myself, and It's been taken to stake presidents, and my own stake president has a copy of it. We're getting warm reception. We work with someone who's in the institute system, and they requested copies to give to the bishops and stake presidents in their area. So I don't think there's anything here doctrinally that church members should object to. So we don't see any reason that it can't be viewed and seen and embraced by members of the church.
What are your other videos? You said you had three.
Yes, and there's a handout. I guess we maybe have run out of that, but it describes all three. There's one about a single fellow who tries to get married for 10 years after his mission, and the same kind of story that Ernie tells, except he doesn't ultimately get married, and he explains how he does all these things to prepare for his family and so on, and then decides that it's not going to happen. But a wonderful individual. The second one is the story of Russ, who some of you may have heard talk about his life this morning at our session. And Russ was married for 25 years, had four children, and his wife ultimately decided she didn't want to be married to a gay man for the rest of her life. So Russ served in a bishopric, a stake presidency, very faithful member of the church, leader in Evergreen for 8 years, and he decided that he had to accept his feelings. And then, of course, this one. So those are the three.
My question would be directed to any one of you. First of all, my oldest daughter is lesbian, and she came out to me a few years ago, but only after so much heartache and struggle with leaders of the church, attempted suicide a few times. She never had the courage to really, or never knew how to really express herself to me, because I was such a straight mo that she wasn't sure that I could open my heart to her. Such was not the case. So the brethren say to you, okay, so you're gay. And then they say, but don't act on it. Don't have relationships. How do you respond to that? And why should you be denied the happiness that the rest of us have?
I thought I'd respond to that because this has been posed before. And I guess maybe I'm getting into some other things that have happened in my life, but Mark and I, 8 years after we went together, we were called into a church court. I believe that the timing was actually inspired because I don't think Mark would have been ready all the prior years. He's been very active in the church, and literally the bishop had been running interference for him. That is, you know, said, just come to the ward, sing in the choir, and Mark had sang in many of the wards in the stake. He's very good voice. And I would go when he would sing. Well, I always warned him, sooner or later somebody's going to challenge this, and they did. And the stake president interviewed us together, you know, he raised this question to us. He said, you know, you seem honorable men, you love each other. Isn't there any way, we need you in the church, is there any way that you can stay together and not be physically intimate? And you know, I'll never forget it, because Mark said, well, now, President Ward, you know, you've been married a long time, and we don't doubt that you love your wife, but what if you were challenged to stay with her the rest of your life and you could never be physically intimate? And you know what he said? I never thought of it that way. And interestingly, I mean, and I think that's one way of responding so that they can identify. It's as if, though, this morning in the session it was said, you know, how would you feel if you're heterosexual? And they said, all right, you know, you can have these feelings, but you can't act on them, and et cetera. What kind of feelings would you have? You know, you say, I can't do anything. They're just there. So anyway, what was interesting is we knew what the conclusion had to be, because we do know the doctrines of the church. But it was a moving chord in that we thought maybe, you know, three people will at least be sympathetic in our attempts to educate, because we didn't approach this to fend or get up and preach. We just said, you know, here's the situation, and turned the opposite, I think. Three ran out of there, and the rest lined up to shake our hands. Many of them were in tears, and the stake president came up to Mark and I, and he said, you know, you're the very kind of people that belong on stake presidencies and on high councils. He says, I'm so frustrated, I don't know what to do. But I think it's to create that empathy of helping them understand what is being asked of them. To put, you know, put it in their shoes through their world and say, could you live the rest of your life and say, yeah, I can be with the person that I love, but we will never be intimate because it's forbidden.
Does he still sing? Oh, yeah, he still sings.
Not in church choir.
That question was never really posed to me in that way in the interviews I had with my bishop. The coming out process, I think, for Mormon people, Mormon youth generally, is very, very difficult, extremely difficult. At the time I was starting to come out, having these feelings, I was starting to date guys, and of course, you know, I was sexually active at the time. And was asked about that by the bishop, but I really believed at the time that this was evil. I bought the church, you know, official position on it. As stated in President Spencer Kimball's book, Is It the Miracle of Forgiveness? There's a chapter in there on homosexuality. And I remember that in that book he described a process he went through when he was first called, I think, as an apostle, that he fasted every day for, like, only had one meal a day or something. I can't remember quite what it was to prepare for this. And I remember trying that myself, thinking, you know, if this is really wrong, God's going to help me. He has to. And so I remember fasting for, like, I don't know, I think it was a month period, you know, part of the day, each day having only one meal, praying a lot. That was the advice I got from one bishop. It was, looking back, it was not good advice, I don't think, personally. He said, I want you to study the scriptures a lot more than you are now, an hour and a half in the morning, hour and a half in the evening. Well, I was going to the University of Utah as a college student carrying 18 credits, working full-time, and I just had no time for this, you know. But I tried and tried and set myself up for failure, you know, and it just, feelings weren't going away, so it was really, for me, a tough process. And so I have a lot of empathy for your daughter. It's tough when you grow up in the church, and you know the church has taken such a strong position on this, that this is, you know, inconsistent with God's law. I'm grateful. I had some suicide thoughts, not, you know, specific suicide thoughts, but just wanted to cease existing at one time. I was always so burdened and guilt-ridden and trying so hard to, you know, conform. I'm just really grateful, and I think it is in part because of the love of my parents that I made it through. So just all I can say is love your daughter, support her. She'll make it through. With love, you know, it's a great force in this world. So.
Before we adjourn, and I'm not saying that to have us discontinue talking with each other, but before we adjourn, I have to say that I watched you folks during the film. Saw your mom with her arm around John, patting his arm, and as age makes them frail, there's no theological argument when you look at these two people and you see that the love they have for each other. There's no theological argument to cause us to
find fault with the love that they have for these men and the love that they have for each other as brothers and the love that they have for their spouses, recognized by the state of California or not. I'm missing my son Brett and his spouse Jeff and my little granddaughter Madeline. Right now she's probably doing something else to put her daddy and her papa in the palm of her hand and continue to raise them in the way to which she has become accustomed. I don't think I have come under condemnation for what I said at BYU because I didn't say anything wrong. And we will change as a people. When we get to know our gay brothers and sisters well enough to recognize in them a goodness that far surpasses our own. When we start to feel bad enough because they are not with us and their unique gifts are not there to bless us in our wards and in our stakes. And we will change little by little as we recognize in the relationships of committed same-sex partners and spouses the same degree of spiritual goodness as in any other heterosexual relationship that we know about. We will see the same degree of sacrifice and love. We will see people who get up in the middle of the night and take care of the people that they love. We will see people who support one another in response to all of the curves that life throws at us that we never thought were coming. These are the things that will make us start to exhibit in our conduct and in our language the commitment to the Savior that we so strongly hold dear.
I have a way of addressing this question that you have raised, and I've explained this to several church leaders, and I think it makes pretty good sense. And my answer is, I know a number of parents who have gay kids. The Bradshaws, dozens of others. The as near as I can tell, since there is so little possibility that people can change, the majority of people who are dealing with this have three choices. They can be celibate. And I think most people can't be celibate for the rest of their lives. Some maybe can, and if they make that choice, then we want to support them. Okay, so there are those who can be celibate. And then the way I explain it, it seems to me there are people who are in committed relationships, and there are people who are not. So we've got sexuality in a committed relationship or outside of one. Now, I can tell you what the good Mormon parents that I know want, where they want their kids to be. It's just that simple.